Let's hear the word of God together. We're going to read from Isaiah chapter 9. Let's hear the word of God together. Nevertheless, there will be no more gloom for those who were in distress. In the past, God humbled the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, but in the future, he will honor Galilee of the nations by the way of the sea beyond the Jordan. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. You have enlarged the nation and have increased their joy. They rejoice before you as people rejoice at the harvest, as soldiers rejoice when dividing the plunder. For as in the day of Midian's defeat, you have shattered the yoke that burdens them, the bar across their shoulders, the rod of their oppressor. Every warrior's boot used in battle and every garment rolled in blood will be destined for burning, will be fuel for the fire. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders. And he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. When I first started to plan this sermon, the theme that came into my mind was the theme of hope. But the more that I got into grips with it, the theme that really came to mind was trust. Of course, the two are very much linked. If we have a hope in God that is firm and secure, we will trust him. Isaiah's chapter 7 to 9, and it would have been good if we could have read the whole of those three chapters, or at least chapter 7 up to where we stopped on chapter 9 today, are at a time when God's people were being called to trust him. Things were very, very difficult in their nation, which we'll go into a little bit more in a minute. Things were very hard, and the king at the time was a man called Ahaz. You might remember last time when we looked at Isaiah chapter 6, it said that Isaiah saw the Lord in the year that King Uzziah died. Well, King Uzziah is well and truly dead by now. His grandson is on the throne. We're talking quite a few years later. And in fact, we know precisely because of what it says in chapter 7, which year all of this happened in. It was the year 735 BC. We know that from the history of what was going on in the world at the time. And the little nation of Judah was really scared. Now, I've got a couple of maps I'd like us to have a look at this morning. Because I think we have to look at the maps to kind of get what's going on here. So if you're into history, you'll find this interesting. If not, you might not. But hopefully this will help. So what you've got here is you've got the eastern bit of the Mediterranean Sea. Where it says places in Isaiah, you're talking about sort of present-day Turkey. Actually, can you put the next one on as well? Because that shows you what it looks like at the moment. So you've got Turkey. You've got Iran and Iraq down on the right-hand side of the map. You've got Israel, Palestine over on the coast of the Mediterranean Sea, Egypt down in North Africa. So that's the map as it is today. So let's go back to the map as it was then. And you can see Israel and Judah there as two different states. Remember, Israel had become one nation under King David. It had been a successful nation. But on the death of David's son Solomon, the nation split into two. The northern bit, which is called Israel, or sometimes Ephraim, it's called in the Bible, and the southern bit called Judah. So you had this divided nation, and the two bits were very often in conflict with each other to a big extent or a small one. Now, if you look much further up, you can see near the top it says Assyria. So you're kind of there at the northern end of present-day Iraq. Can we just go onto the map again? The other map, please. So you can see where Iraq, going into a bit of Iran and Turkey, maybe a bit of Armenia, sort of around that sort of area, that's where Assyria was in those days. So back to the Bible times one, please. So back to the other one. So you've got Assyria to the north, and at the time that this was going on, Assyria was the big world power. It was at this time that countries began to think about having empires. They hadn't really been thought of until then. And Assyria had this ambition that it was going to take over all of this area. That's what they wanted to do. Now, what had happened was, if you'd gone back a couple of generations, the Assyrian Empire had grown pretty quickly, but it had stopped because different kings had come to the throne and the new kings were not particularly effective kings. But a new king now had come to the throne very roughly at the same time as King Uzziah died. And the name of this king, you're going to love this name. Don't know if you'll remember it, but you're going to love his name. His name was King Tiglath-Pileser III. Wouldn't you love to have a name like that? King Tiglath-Pileser III. And he was a serious king who wanted to be an emperor. So he builds up the army and he wants to go and just take over all of this land. Now, if you come down from Assyria heading towards the coast, you can see Syria is there, or Aram, as it's called at this stage in the Bible. So Syria, Aram, and Israel are scared out of their wits. They see what is coming to them, that this Assyrian army, this Assyrian nation, is getting more and more powerful and is going to take them. And very quickly, they are having to pay money to Assyria in a failed attempt to buy them off. So Syria and Israel, this is what happens at the start of Isaiah chapter 7. Syria and Israel form an alliance. They think, well, maybe we've got a better chance of fighting off Assyria if we fight together. So they form this alliance and they say, we're going to fight together. And they turn to Judah down in the south, and they say to Judah, come and join us. You know, we'll get an army together, and together we will stand together as one, and we will defeat Assyria. The king of Judah, King Ahaz, says, no, I'm not going to do that. And as a result of that, in a classic example of doing the wrong thing, Syria and Israel attack Judah, and they attack its capital city, Jerusalem. Now, it says in Isaiah that this attack was so successful that it actually reached Jerusalem. They didn't succeed in taking Jerusalem, but they devastated the country. And the country was in a mess. Hundreds of thousands of people were killed. People were taken prisoner. It was a total disaster for the people of Judah. Right, you with me so far? Some of you are. Great. Okay. Okay, here's the question. Let's see who's a good military strategist here. If you were the king of Judah, what would you do? So you've got Assyria, the big nation to the north. You've got two nations in between that want to attack or are attacking you. What do you do? You join up with which one? You join up with us. Did you know that? Or are you the strategist? You're the strategist. Okay. You do what Britain did in the Second World War. You know, in the Second World War, Britain allied with the USSR. They allied with Stalin. And the story goes, I'm not sure if this is true or not, but you know, when Churchill was challenged, why are you forming an alliance with Stalin? Was his response, you know, that he would ally with the devil if he could beat Hitler by doing it? Did he say that? I've heard that he did. However, that's roughly what was going on here. So Judah decides, right, we are going to form this alliance with Assyria. Bad move. Because what is the point of forming an alliance with the nation that wants to destroy you? So in Isaiah chapter 7, The prophet Isaiah stands up to King Ahaz and says to him, you are getting this seriously wrong. The reason that you're getting it wrong, he says, is that the two kings, the nations that you're frightened of, are going to fall anyway. You really have nothing to be worried about. Just be patient and they'll collapse, whatever you do. And Isaiah was right there. They only lasted 3 more years before Assyria completely clobbered them. And the Assyrian policy was to take people out of their lands and take them to other places. So what started to happen then was the way that the northern kingdom really disappeared. It just completely lost its identity, and we've no idea where they went. They just intermarried with the nations around as they were moved about all over the place. So Isaiah is challenging the king to trust God. He's saying, look, I know this situation that you are in is awful. He's saying, but if you ally with Assyria, Assyria is going to end up destroying you. And God says through Isaiah to the king, if you don't stand in your faith, you will not stand at all. Now, King Ahaz, who was the king of Israel at this time, is not given a good write-up in the Bible. If you've got a Bible with you, you might like to turn to 2 Chronicles chapter 28. Remember, this is Uzziah's grandson. Uzziah had been a good king most of the time. Ahaz was 20 years old when he became king. He reigned in Jerusalem for 16 years. But unlike David, his father, he did not do what was right in the eyes of the Lord. He followed the ways of the kings of Israel and also made idols for worshipping the Baals. He burned sacrifices in the valley of Ben-Hinnom and sacrificed his children in the fire, engaging in the detestable practices of the nations that the Lord had driven out before the Israelites. And so it goes on, but that's enough to make the point. I wanted to read that verse on child sacrifice because child sacrifice has been on the news in this last week about it going on, and you know, kids being kidnapped to be sacrificed, and you know how the police are worried about this sort of thing going on in our own country, let alone in other countries. And what Isaiah is saying to the king is what the Bible consistently says. If you turn from the true God, if you start worshipping other gods, if you do the things that these so-called other gods demand of you, like child sacrifice, then you will be judged for it and you will pay the penalty. And if you go trying to make friends with the king of Assyria, well, God is saying no. God is saying to the king, you must stand in your faith. You must stand in your faith in one God, and you must trust him. Because if you do not trust him, you are going to make decisions that are disastrous for your nations. Now, in Isaiah 7 to 9, we learn something about what happens when a nation or when a person does not trust God. The first thing that happens is fear. When the people hear about this alliance between Syria and Israel, when the army comes sweeping into the nation, they are terrified. Well, of course they were. What else would you be? But the job of the prophet Isaiah is to say, no, it's not them you have to be afraid of. Within 3 years' time, these nations are gone. Hold out for just a very short amount of time, and you won't have to worry about them again. Don't panic. And God says to us today, says to our nation today, if the nation will listen, but certainly says to us, you don't need to be afraid. You can trust me. And when we hear those words, if you're anything like me, you think, but God, you don't know what's going on down here. Look at this, look at that, look at the other, look what's happening in my life. Lord, I am fearful. I am worried. And God says, well, in the words of the New Testament, that the trials that we go through last for a moment, but that what God builds stands forever. We can trust God because God is working to a long-term hope, because God is building his kingdom. And in chapter 8, the prophet Isaiah, chapter 8, verse 12, he speaks to the people and he says, it's quite long words here, it says, "Do not call conspiracy everything this people calls a conspiracy. Do not fear what they fear. Do not dread it." In other words, yes, all the people around are terrified. All the people around are scared. But they're scared of the wrong thing. They're scared of something which is short term and doesn't matter. And then Isaiah says this, Isaiah chapter 8, verse 13. "The Lord Almighty is the one you are to regard as holy. He is the one you are to fear. He is the one you are to dread." See, the Bible teaches us that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. When we know something of God, as we looked at last time with that incredible vision that Isaiah had in Isaiah chapter 6. And he was so moved by this vision that he was scared and he thought that he would be destroyed and he thought he was going to die. But when he got past that vision, when he knew who God was, he found he wasn't afraid of human beings anymore. He found that he was able to stand before human beings, no matter who they were, and to say what God had told him to say. And his message to the people was, don't be afraid of what everybody else is afraid of. There isn't any need to be afraid of that. Far more wise to be afraid of God and to be worried about what God thinks of you rather than afraid about what other people think about you. And as people lost their sight of God, as they lost their sight of God's grandeur, they started to make wrong decisions of all sorts, in all sorts of ways. One of the wrong decisions that they made, and it tells us this towards the end of chapter 8, was that they got very interested in mediums and spiritists, as it said. They started trying to consult the dead. Instead of letting their friends die when they died and letting them go to be with the Lord, they wanted to call them back. They wanted to talk to them. And Isaiah says, no, what are you doing trying to contact the dead? What you should be doing is trying to contact the Lord because he is alive and you need to start listening to his wisdom. But when we turn away from God, when we lose our fear of God, then all other fears start to take us over. The only way to be free of fear in our lives is to fear God more than all the other things we could be afraid of. If we start treating God casually, if we start treating God as if he don't matter very much, then we sentence ourselves to being afraid. And another sign of lack of trust in God is that we stop praying. There's a bit in Isaiah 7 where Isaiah is arguing with King Ahaz. And Isaiah says to Ahaz, ask the Lord for a sign. You know, okay, you don't want to do what God's telling you to do, but ask him for a sign. Ask him to show you. And Ahaz refuses to do it. Now, it sounds in one way as if Ahaz is trying to be spiritual. He says, well, I won't put the Lord my God to the test. And Jesus used that line as well. But Ahaz isn't really saying, I don't want to test the Lord. What he's saying is, I don't want to hear from the Lord. What he's saying is, I've made up my mind. I'm going to ally with Assyria. I'm going to go my way with other gods. I'm going to sacrifice my children in the fire, or sacrifice other people's children in the fire, so that some God is going to bless me somewhere. I've made my choice, he says, and I'm going to stick to it. And Isaiah says, no. He says to King Ahaz, you're trying the patience of God. You're wearing God out. You can trust God. You can put your hope in the Lord. And if you trust him, then he will intervene in your life. If you trust him, he will make the difference. And everything that Isaiah prophesied came true. 701 BC, so what, 30-odd years after what's written in this chapter, the Assyrian troops stormed into Judah, and they made the then king of Judah pay them vast amounts of money. They took a lot of their territory and almost destroyed Judah as a nation. When Ahaz didn't fear God, he feared the wrong people. And when he feared the wrong people, he made the wrong choices. So the call of these chapters, Isaiah 7 to 9, is a call to trust in God. And for us as believers in Jesus, it is a call to trust his son. I mean, we read from Isaiah chapter 9, a prophecy which leads to Jesus about this great king, that those who walk in darkness will see a great light, that God is going to shatter the war-making powers of this world. Very similar to what we looked at a few weeks ago in Isaiah chapter 2. The day is coming when people won't learn war anymore. The day is coming when the arms industries will be switched off because there will be no need. There will come a time when people will not always be ready for the next fight. And how is it going to come? It's going to come through God's Son, Jesus Christ. That is what we're hoping for, and that is what we're trusting for. And Isaiah's job then, and our job now, is to witness to this hope. In Isaiah chapter 8, Isaiah says this. He says, "Here I am, and the children the Lord has given me, we are signs and symbols in Israel from the Lord Almighty who dwells on Mount Zion. And we as his church are called to be the sign and the symbol to the people who are around us. We are called that people should look at us and they should see something different. That they should see people who really trust God. That they would see people who know what it is to seek God and to do what God is calling them to do." And Isaiah warns the people the consequences if you don't. If you don't trust God, he says, you will be defeated. He says to them, look, you think that if you don't trust God, you can do a few things to defend yourself. You can do a few things to help yourself. But Isaiah says it's not like that. If you don't trust God, it's you that's going to end up being trodden on. And Jesus said a similar thing to Jerusalem in his day. Go my way, or the Romans are going to tread on you. And in chapter 8, there's a few verses where it talks about the people rejecting a gently flowing river. God wanted to be gentle with them. God wanted to let his blessing come over them in a very gentle sort of way. But God says, you've rejected what is Gentile, so instead, here comes the king of Assyria. You've rejected the way I wanted to bless you, so now you are going to receive in a very different way. These people have rejected the flowing waters of Shiloah, and they rejoice over Rezin, who was the king of Syria, and the son of Remaliah, who was the king of Israel. Therefore, the Lord is about to bring against him the mighty flood waters of the Euphrates. The king of Assyria, with all his pomp, it will overflow all its channels, run over all its banks, and sweep onto Judah, swirling over it, passing through it, and reaching up to the neck. Its outspread wings will cover the breadth of your land. God is with us. He says later on, people are going to stumble. People are going to fall because they would not trust God. That's a serious message. And the sad thing is that the people didn't listen to Isaiah, as Isaiah had been warned, as we saw last time round. Go and keep speaking to these people until it all falls apart, is what God said to Isaiah last time. But we're here today, and we can come here and we can listen to God. And it might be that for you today, there are areas of your life where at the moment you are finding it very difficult to trust God. Well, today, make the decision to say, I will trust him. And if you trust him, it will have implications. You know, if you don't trust God that he can save your marriage, you will be tempted to go and have an affair. That's how this works. If you don't trust God that he can sort out your finances, you will be tempted to go and steal, or perhaps be tempted to fiddle expenses, or however it is you go about doing it. God calls us to obedience. God calls us to follow him. And he says, if you trust me, I'll look after you. I'll take care of you. And when it all cries out within us that it's not so, God says that it really is. So today we're going to trust the Prince of Peace. Today we're going to trust the one who was born in Bethlehem. Today we're going to trust the one who was crucified, who died and was resurrected. Today we are going to trust the one who has promised he is going to bring in his kingdom. And we're going to do what Jesus said, to seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all the other things that we need will be added to us as well. It's a big thing that we're being called to, but that kingdom is coming. Of the increase of his government and peace, there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. May God give us trust in that God today.